Welcome to episode 3 of the MTG Deck Techs podcast. Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of the MTG Deck Techs podcast. I'm James, and I'm joined here today with Jason. How you doing, Jason?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's great to be here today, and we're going to talk some really cool Magic stuff, so I'll send it back to you to get us going here.
Yeah, we got a bunch of topics to talk about. This episode took a little bit longer to get out, so we have about 2 weeks of stuff to go over. Some of the topics we're going to include, we're going to announce the winner of our booster pack giveaway from the last episode, along with the answers to the questions we asked from our Triple Strike trivia questions. We have pre-release that happened this weekend. At the time of recording, we're in the middle of the weekend, so we can talk a little bit about our pre-release experiences and what we hope to get from additional pre-release games. And then we have Arena. We've seen the open beta come out. Talk a little bit about that. And then moving back in time a little bit, we had Worlds and the Jerry Thompson boycott of Worlds, which we think is pretty interesting, and we're going to try to touch on that. And then we're going to finish it off with a little update about Brawl on Magic the Gathering Online, as well as WotC's decision to partner with Amazon and Walmart and kind of what we expect that to look like as far as Magic and the relationship with local game stores. And then we're going to finish it off with something that we're going to do every episode, and that is the community spotlight. We're going to highlight another content creator in the Magic community that you may or may not have heard of, talk a little bit about what they do, and hopefully you can direct your attention there. But before we get into all of that, of course, if you would like to help support MTG Deck Techs, this show, and our website, and all of the content that we create, make sure that you, when you go to inkedgaming.com, to buy whatever gaming supplies you need, be it dice bags or playmats, that you use the promo code TEX10 at checkout. That's spelled TECHS10. That'll get you 10% off, and it is an affiliate code for us. We will get a small benefit, so it's a win-win. And then also, if you want to support the website and the show directly, make sure to hit us on our Patreon site at patreon.com/themtgdecktechs. Any little bit helps, and then you do get a little bit of exclusive benefits with that as well. And then also we have a reminder. So coming up at the end of this week, we have the Booster Box giveaway. So do you have the details on that, Jason?
Yes. So as we've stated before, we have the Booster Box giveaway for a Guilds of Ravnica Booster Box. It's a Gleam giveaway. We have a video on our YouTube that has the Gleam address that you can go to and fill out. We're going to finish that up on Friday, so when Guilds of Ravnica releases, the contest will end, and the next day I will select somebody to get that box to them. So if you haven't yet, go to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/c/mtgdecktechs, check out the 500 subscriber giveaway, and fill out that Gleam info in the description box to get yourself set up to maybe win a booster box of Guilds of Ravnica when it releases.
Jesus. Free booster box. Do you know what the EV is right now on booster boxes for Guilds of Ravnica?
There's a lot of, I haven't looked at the full financial aspect of it, but I mean, there's a lot of like high value cards in it. I'm not going to say they're like super high value, but there's quite a few that are at the $5 to $7 range. I know Assassin's Trophy is probably the most expensive card out of it right now. But I think overall the set is going to be financially, like, it's going to be pretty valuable. I think the EV of the boxes are going to be pretty good. And then, of course, we're going to throw in the Impervious Great Worm that we get with the buy box, too.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, no, I think I haven't really dove into it either. I was kind of wondering if you had. But from what I've heard and what I've seen is a lot of people are grabbing these boxes up. So make sure if you want one for free that you enter and you fill out the Gleam link. It helps us, and you might be able to get a booster box out of it. All right, so that's pretty much all the intro stuff, and we're gonna kick it off with the winner of the booster pack giveaway. So our last episode, we put out a promotion that every episode we're going to be giving away a free booster pack. So we're going to have a booster pack of Guilds of Ravnica sent out to our lucky winner, who this week is MTG Strategist. So congratulations, MTG Strategist. He submitted his entry on Twitter at MTG_strategist. So we'll be making sure to get a hold of you, and you will get that Guilds of Ravnica booster pack. And he also provided the answers for the Triple Strike questions from last episode. So the first question had to do with Sorceress Spyglass and whether or not its text box affected cycling on the named card. And it turns out that it does. So if you play Sorceress Spyglass and you name a card that cannot use its abilities and that card has cycling, that card can no longer cycle. So that was the answer to the first strike question. The double strike question was, what are the quantities and rarities in a standard booster pack? And the answer for that that we accepted was 10 commons, 3 uncommon, and 1 rare. And we told you not to worry about the land slot or whatever, the foil slot, that confusing slot. So that was the answer the MTG Strategist provided, and he was correct. And then the final question, the last strike question, was what was the first set that the Planeswalker card, as we know it, was first printed? And that set was Lorwyn. So those are your answers for the very first Triple Strike trivia questions that we presented on episode 2. So there'll be more at the end of this episode and another chance to win a booster pack. We're going to change a little bit on how you enter it, but make sure to listen to the end and then you can enter for that chance to win. All right, so our next topic is the pre-release. So, Jason, did you get a chance to play in pre-release at all?
I have not played in pre-release yet. I plan on going tomorrow, which is Sunday. I'll be playing at 2 o'clock there, hopefully getting my hands on, I want to say Dimir. I want to run Dimir.
So I did play. I went and played at the midnight pre-release, and Dimir is pretty strong. So it turns out Surveil is pretty effective. I saw people trying to mix it with Undergrowth, but is there anything you're trying to go for with the Dimir?
Yeah, I just found out that like Surveil is just super, super really good in limited, and I'm hoping to get that big Demon, the Doom Whisperer. Like, that would be pretty sweet. I can take over games like that. Also, I mean, I was really interested in the Golgari too, if I want to go spiky, if I have a change of heart at the end and I just want to try to get that Assassin's Trophy promo, I'll go Golgari. But overall, I think this format's very it's very equal, and it's very, like, I can't think of the word.
Just balanced, I think.
Yeah, it's very balanced as far as, like, what the guilds can do. Like, everything has a way to win in this format, and it's pretty cool. This is the most balanced format I've seen in Sealed for quite a while.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. And it's funny that you bring up the Golgari thing, because I went to the midnight pre-release, and it seemed like, so how they did it for us is we signed up for the midnight pre-release, and whatever order you signed up in was the order that you got to choose your guild once the event started. So the event started, and they were going down the list, and straight up, like, the first 20 people at this 40-person pre-release I was at wanted Golgari. Every single one of them. And I'm almost convinced all of them were just hoping for that promo Assassin's Trophy. And it's funny because, I mean, I didn't go around and ask or hunt for the Assassin's Trophy. And the community where I play is pretty... they're not overly rambunctious, so I don't know if most of them or if any of them actually found an Assassin's Trophy, but I do know of two people that got Assassin's Trophies, and it was myself and a buddy of mine, and we both picked Boros. So I don't know if WotC's just playing a joke on everyone and hiding Assassin's Trophies in the Boros guilds, but I thought that was pretty interesting, and I was super happy to get it. But also with pre-release is they're testing out... There was a couple things that also came with the pre-release packs / booster packs, and one of them was codes for Arena. So they're kind of toying with the code concept again, and if you played, almost everyone I saw ended up getting a token card or some sort of advertisement card with a code on the back that allowed you to type in and get a free sealed event on Arena. So what are your thoughts on the codes, and... what extent do you think WotC should do the code thing. Should it be like Pokemon where it's a, you know, this booster pack ends up being a booster pack on digital? Or do you think it should just be events, or what do you think?
All right, well, call me crazy, but I think that, well, as far as the codes coming out of the pre-release things, I think that's great. And also, I think that there's a code going around right now, Play Ravnica, on Arena, that you get 3 free booster packs. I'm not 100% sure of the validity of that, but I believe that that has actually worked. Now, I think that that's great. And going forward, they're going to be putting one code card in, like, every... It's going to be one out of every 8 packs that you can go and get a booster pack. I don't know if it's one booster pack or 3 for those, but you can get booster packs on Arena that way. However, I think that's pretty greedy on their part. They should be doing it in every booster pack, in my opinion. I think it should be kind of like the Pokemon TCG online, where you get your booster pack becomes, you buy it in real life and you get it online. Basically, if you're not doing that, it almost feels like WotC wants you to buy the cards twice. And I know that they're trying to make money and they're trying to make Arena, you know, profitable. But still, I think it would have been a good gesture to make them more available than just one out of 8 booster packs.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I did hear about that. They're going to have a code, 1 per 8 booster packs or something like that. It was on an announcement on the WotC homepage. I don't remember the article, but I also remember that I think there's a limit. So I think that though there might be a code in 1 per 8, maybe it was 6, but 1 per several booster packs, I think per account, you can only turn in so many. Just like I saw...
I believe that's 1.
Is it just 1?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think, if I remember right, I should have brought it up, but yeah, I think it was 1 code for 3 boosters, and that's kind of useless in my opinion. And also, what I saw at the pre-release was a lot of people were going around asking for these codes for the free sealed event, and in the fine print and on that article, it's only 1 per account. So, I mean, all these, unless these dudes are going to open up like 100 different accounts and use all these sealed events for like a stream or something, I think that's kind of a bummer. But yeah, I think that it might actually help Magic or in WotC if it was the booster pack per booster pack. So if there was a code in each booster pack that let you redeem it for digital, I think that would actually help with at least the promotion of the LGS. So they want their digital platform. People will pay for stuff on the digital platform. And if they don't, WotC's still making money on the paper platform, except that's also helping the local game stores and the local community, which I think will help spread the game faster than someone sitting at home just playing digitally. I'm not really sure, but I think it would actually help the game and potentially make them more money than otherwise just hoping that people will spend on it twice.
Yeah, like, the way that I look at it is, I really think that they should offer booster packs, a booster pack in digital and in paper whenever you buy a booster pack. Because ultimately, Arena is there for people that can't afford MTGO, in my opinion. It's more readily available for everybody. And as long as you can download it, you can play it. You could play it for free. You don't have to buy anything, really, and you can just grind your way into better decks. But I think that the more people that are playing Arena, the more likely those people are going to translate that into playing in paper and buying booster packs, buying your sealed product. I think that if you were able to get more people in Arena, you're going to get more people playing in paper.
I don't know if I agree with that, actually. So, I mean, like, do you think... Now, Hearthstone as an example, or Eternal as an example. Now, of course, those particular card games only really work on a digital platform because of how the deck is manipulated and stuff. But I don't know if with that strong digital platform, it would necessarily translate to paper. And I think that's kind of where Magic is having an issue with the Arena paper thing, is because they're going from paper too digital. But I think we're straying a little bit. But yeah, I think that we're both on the same page that I think a booster with a code for both would be most healthy for the game. At least that's what I think.
Yeah, and one of the, well, is to going back on the Hearthstone thing, you can get Hearthstone in some of those games on a mobile device.
Oh, that's true.
So that's what helps them out more. You can't get that on, you can't get Arena or MTGO on a mobile device.
Which is why I loved Duels. I actually really liked Duels and was one of the people that was pretty upset when they kind of all out of nowhere just stopped supporting it. Yeah. Yeah, I think that would help. If they can get Arena onto mobile platforms, that would be really big. There was also a second thing that I noticed at the pre-release. We kind of went from pre-release straight into Arena, but there was one other thing in pre-release I wanted to bring up, aside from the fact that Ravnica Sealed and Ravnica, or Guilds of Ravnica Limited, looks awesome, and I think it's going to be really, really fun in the future. And if you haven't gone to a pre-release, well, everyone will once they have listened to this, you should pick Boros, and you probably have seen it after your pre-release that Boros was pretty strong and Mentor was underrated, in my opinion. But anyway, so Wizards announced another thing in the similar time that they announced the codes that were going to be in the pre-release, and I thought it was pretty funny that they're having these little cards, they're little advertisements for the Magic app called Portal. And their announcement was that, hey, you're going to see these advertisements for this app that we're developing, but sorry, guys, we didn't actually complete it. We were being overly optimistic. So disregard the advertisements and just keep on holding on and just be aware that we're developing an app. So I don't know if you heard about that or what your thoughts are on how that was executed.
I actually haven't. I hadn't heard about it at all. That's news to me. But do you know exactly what it entailed? Like, what is the app supposed to be?
I'm not entirely sure. Again, I read it like last week. It came out a little while ago. It's supposed to be some sort of companion app. I'm not sure if it's going to be like a collection manager or if it's going to be a news thing or what. But it's a Magic app that's actually developed by WotC. And so the fact that they had placed it into this pre-release packs and all these boosters, that it was a thing and advertising for people to jump on it, and they were behind and they didn't deliver on time, just cracks me up. And I'm excited to hear about an app, of course, but I think it's really funny that they had leaned that far forward and missed.
I'm not totally surprised either that they did that.
Which is such a bummer. And I feel like as we keep going through this episode that we're just ragging on WotC, but they've definitely stumbled a couple times in the recent past. Like, if they keep messing up, so it's kind of a bummer. But yeah, so aside from that, I just wanted to bring that up. I hope everyone out there enjoyed their pre-release event. I hope you guys all had great prize support and you all got Assassin's trophies. But we're gonna move on to the open beta. So we were already talking about Arena a little bit, but if you were unaware or if you haven't been playing Arena, the open beta came out. And if you were on the closed beta, you were probably, hopefully you weren't surprised, but they did the account wipe. You have nothing that you did have, and you are reimbursed with the gems that you had bought with your own money before the account wipe. So those should have been returned to you. Also, if you were a closed beta member, make sure you check your email. There's a promo code in there for 3 planeswalkers that you can redeem immediately in the open beta. So, I don't know. Are you on Arena?
I'm not. I'm going to try to download it, but I have a really crappy computer. But we'll see if I can get it. If I can get it, I'll play it. But it all comes down to me downloading it. I didn't even try with the closed beta, because I didn't think I could handle it. But I'll give it a shot with it being open now.
So, it's really great. I think it's great, and you definitely should try to download it. It is a little bit intensive on the computer. I know my computer starts like, you know, puffing smoke and freaking crying whenever I play it, but it's really pretty, and it's a really cool interface. And with the open beta, I haven't really dove into it, but I do like that right when you start off, it has like this tutorial that you can go through, and they give you plenty of decks with decent cards that you can really just jump in and start playing. So if you're listening to this and you haven't tried Arena, I encourage you to jump on. I think it's going to be I think it's going to get pretty popular pretty fast. It's definitely a way better interface than MTGO. I've never been really a big fan of Magic Online, other than just for testing purposes and you know, affordability as opposed to paper. But yeah, so the Arena Open Beta is open, and you're probably going to see a lot of server issues, I would imagine, with the huge influx of people and a lot of content creators and new content creators hitting up the Twitch streams. So make sure to keep that up. Do you have anything else on Arena that you want to bring up, or its impact, or the boosters, or anything like that?
Yeah, I think, especially if you're into Standard, I would definitely jump on Arena. It's a lot more accessible than MTGO. Of course, it doesn't have the non-rotating formats. I think Momir's in there too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they do like crazy events all the time. I think right now they have like a Ravnica. They have some sort of singleton event that's going on repeatedly, because no one has anything with the account wipes, so it's really easy for everyone to just jump in with some mediocre singleton decks and duke it out. But yeah, that's a great point. That it's definitely good for Standard. You don't have the Eternal formats up there.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, like, it's really cool that it's actually moving forward. It kind of seemed like it was taking forever for them to even open it up. Hopefully they'll get what they need to just completely publish it. Since we're still in an open beta, but it's still a beta. But once it goes public, I think that it's going to be, like, it should be top notch with all the effort that they're putting into it.
They really are putting a lot of effort into it. Hopefully it pays off. Hopefully it's good for the game. I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see where that goes. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've probably heard a lot of other conversations over other podcasts, articles, different content creators talking about the potential impact of Arena. And there's a lot to dive in on that, and whether or not the health of Magic is at risk. I don't really think the health of Magic is at risk, but I am curious to see what the culture change is going to be. Speaking of culture change and the health of Magic, so a couple weeks ago, 2 weekends ago, we had Worlds taking place in Las Vegas. It was a pretty interesting event, and I think, unfortunately, one of the biggest highlights of the event was Jerry Thompson's boycott of it. Are you tracking anything about that?
Yeah, actually, I kind of went sort of Twitter famous. I responded to a tweet that had the Katniss Everdeen, like the, I don't know what it is, the
mocking. Oh, the little three-finger thing?
Yeah. Well, I took, somebody asked, they said that somebody needed to Photoshop Jerry's face on that GIF. Well, I just took the picture of it, and I cut out Jerry's head, and I put it on it, and pasted it and everything, and I was like, I did this in 5 minutes on my crappy phone editing software. Hopefully this will do for now. Man, it got retweeted like crazy. Todd Anderson retweeted it. I think it ended up with like 160 likes. It's my most liked post. It was great.
That's
now,
awesome.
Now, as far as Jerry goes, I think what he did was very, very noble, and it's something that needed to be done. If you just take a look at he came out with a document stating exactly everything that he was protesting for. Pros don't get paid enough, for sure. And I think that, you know, we talked about the Pro Tour changes on the last podcast. I think that they're going in the right direction, but I don't think that they're where they need to be yet. Because you can't make a living off of being a pro player, and you have to put way too much time into it for way too little money. I just think that they need to get a better pay. Honestly, they need to utilize their star players better, and they really need to take a page out of SCG's book, because the way that SCG uses their content creators and their pro players that are on their circuit is great. You know all their names. You'd be hard pressed to even like name anybody that was even at Worlds, truthfully. And their communication with the pro players has been god-awful for them. So I think overall they need to do a lot of stepping up. And I think Jerry doing this has brought attention to it. And I think that maybe something will be done now.
Do you think so? So that was going to be kind of my follow-up. So, yeah, so I didn't see that exact document. What I did see was LSV actually published a Q&A with him on Channel Fireball, and it was the Saturday of Worlds, and it was just him talking to him and posting what the whole situation was from his mouth, and it was a really interesting read. And some of the great things about how I think he did it was that he didn't tell anyone about it. So this wasn't, you know, a movement in a huge wave that only he was stuck by himself, you know, doing. It was something that he chose to do by himself and didn't tell anyone because he didn't want to put them in a difficult situation. You know, he didn't want to create sides with the other pros, like, oh, you guys are still going to Worlds, you know, the biggest tournament that you can go to, while all of us are sucking it up, like, we need to remain united. He kind of separated from that and just did it himself. So I'm curious to see what the next big tournament is going to look like now that this seal has been kind of broken. And then also, I thought that some of his points were really interesting too. So it wasn't just the pros' inability of getting paid, but the lack of star building. So Wizards doesn't necessarily need to pay pros. Like, they don't need to be on a salary. They probably could do better with their prize payouts for pros, and I think the Pro Tour schedule that we talked about is a step in that right direction. Small step, but a step. But I think it was brought up on MTG Goldfish's podcast the Monday after Worlds as well. But the ability to star build will give that pro player the ability to make money on their own through their content, through their streaming, and, you know, create a wider audience. You know, something to aspire to be, and something that, I don't know, it's an interesting subject, because I'm curious, what do you think Wizards is going to do about this? Like, are they actually going to listen, or is just one player, you know, kind of boycotting one event really going to hurt Wizards? Because this has been going on for a long time.
I think that Jerry's big enough that they're going to do something about it. And as far as the star building goes, they really need to do something, because, like, as I was saying, like, you can name just about everybody on the SCG circuit.
Yeah, they all have tokens.
Yeah, they all have tokens. They have things. Like, they get things, and they're made to be on this pedestal, and that's what they should be doing with the Pro Tour and the pros. Because, honestly, they need to... WotC doesn't need to pay them, but they need to get them to a point where they are seen as a higher... like, higher than where they are, so that they can get the sponsorships that they need. It's all about sponsorships at that point. That was the whole point of them making teams for the Pro Tour. But it was still very hard for teams to find sponsorships. But you can go and look at the people that are playing on the SCG Tour. Team BCW on the SCG Tour, they have sponsors. BCW sponsors them. It was so easy for them to get sponsorship because they're known. They sell. SCG yeah. Tours, that their streams sell, they're gonna get more views than WotC's do, like the actual, like, Pro Tours and the Grand Prix. SCG's blow them away. So that's the thing. Like, they need to start looking at SCG and learning from it, so that they can get better, so their pros feel like they're pros actually, and they can get the sponsorships that they need, so that they can get the cards that they need and get to where they need to be in order to play at a professional level.
I think you're right. And I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think it's just a lost opportunity for WotC too. So it's not just to support the pros. It's just it would be a mutually gaining relationship if WotC could create stars. Like, if they create stars, they're carrying their brand on their back. You know, people start hearing about these people, it spreads the audience larger, and it just helps sell more product. I don't know, it's what every other company does with all of their athletes or sponsors or endorsements. I mean, like, it's what everyone else does, and I don't understand why WotC isn't.
If you make stars out of these people, out of these pros, you get non-grinders and, like, the casual players that might want to go competitive. They have somebody to look up to, and they have like, well, I could be like this person.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like they're on the pedestal, and they can get people to try to be them.
Yeah. And then there's other issues that he brings up too, other than just the star building, that I had actually forgotten about. And I think it's easy for a lot of us to forget about because of WotC's lack of coverage of their own events. So I don't know if you remember the Silver Showcase that took place a little while ago.
Yep.
Yeah, so are you tracking all the issues with the fact that half the people were like Hearthstone players and stuff?
Yeah, so what they did there was a good idea. As far as bringing people, they wanted to bring a different audience in. So they go out and get these other content creators from different games to come in and play. Where they failed the execution was the format. They did a beta draft. Who out there watching the stream is going to be like, oh, let's go down to LGS and beta draft? Nobody.
Right. No. I completely agree. Yeah, so what they did was a good idea with the whole, you know, bring in the other games, right? Like, try to spread to this similar audience, those card players out there. Yes, the format was wrong, but I think what the point was, how it ties to Jerry's thing, was this was a beta draft. This was a Magic... This was something for diehard Magic fans. You know what I mean? Like, so with this event, it should have been all Magic pros. It should have been like Hall of Famers playing this that have been playing the game forever, like only, and catered to the MTG community as kind of part of that star building and kind of part of a give back to these pros. Like, hey, here's an extra event for you guys that have paid so much into this game that we can stand you up and you can win some extra cash. So that was my impression of it when he kind of tied this into it. But it's kind of a tangent, but I was just surprised that I'd forgotten about that event until I was reading this Q&A that LSV did with him, and he was saying how WotC didn't even listen to that kind of feedback that was coming from the pros in relation to the Silver Showcase. And that kind of makes me wonder if they're going to listen to Jerry Thompson this time.
Yeah, as far as this Silver Showcase goes, like, no, the beta draft would have been great, but only if you had people that were in Magic to show people those Magic players doing the beta draft. What they should have did to get the new audience is to have taken the people from the other games and the other content creators and stuff, bring them in and do a... Heck, bring him in and do a limited Guilds of Ravnica thing. Do a Guilds of Ravnica booster draft. They had the product for it. Oh, wait, no, that was a Silver Showcase. You could have did an M19 draft or a Dominaria draft. Anything that was accessible to people that audience would bring in. So that's where they truly failed, is they brought in people to bring in another audience, but gave them a format that nobody else is going to play. I think as far as them listening to Jerry now, listening to the pros now, I think that they're taking the steps in the right direction with the Pro Tour scheduling for pros. There's also a pro player ambassador team now that is going to report to them. I think that's a great way for things to change and things to get better for them, to have like people to go out and like ask for feedback and stuff and report their feedback directly to Wizards. I think that that's great to have. So I think that they're going in the right direction with that. I don't think we're going to see like 100% change like right away, but we're working. I think they're going to work towards it.
Yeah, it'll take time. I hope they do. I mean, otherwise the community will fall apart over time. You know, it'll just be a brain drain. You know, all these best card players that are in it to make money, you know, they're going to go to these other games that they can make significant, payouts on. I think so I was listening to the MTG Goldfish podcast, and Saffron Olive actually put out some statistic. I don't know the validity of it, but he was saying that, you know, a lot of these pro players spread over their career of playing, and you take their career winnings. Actually, it might have been the owner of MTG Goldfish, not Saffron Olive, but he was saying that, you know, on average, if you average it out across the years, and their payouts, they're making maybe $40,000 a year, $30,000 a year on Magic. And that's not exactly a dream. You know, that's not pro football dream kind of thing. Even though that's the other extreme. But I thought that was an interesting statistic, and I haven't really looked into it, but that definitely needs to be improved if they're going to want to try to draw people to the game.
Yeah, their biggest competition now, like Artifact, that game, it's a digital game, of course, but like it's in its beta right now, closed beta.
That's right. And Valve too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Valve, and it's going to, they're going to be competing with it. Honestly, if they're trying to go the esports route, they're going to be competing with it, and people are going to go create content for it, and it's probably going to be more viewed more than Magic is, honestly. So if you're trying to get an audience to come in and watch you, you need to start making these people stars, and you need to start allowing them to make a living off of it so that they can help your brand.
Yep. And you know what I think would help? So this is just kind of an off the top of my head thing that could help. Maybe not save it, but so you've probably seen Game Nights, right? From Command Zone.
Yeah.
Those guys. So their production quality is absurd on watching Magic. So if there was potentially like a league that played with that level of production value that was published like a TV show, I would watch that. You know what I mean? Like that could be as like an e-sporting event that you watch on a regular basis that you could follow the players, you could follow the teams, keep track of their standings, and have a high production value medium of which to watch them. I think that could solve a lot of the problems.
Look,
it'd be really fun.
yeah. If you're looking at the production value of them and comparing that better than WotC, that there's no reason why it should be better. Like, no. Game Nights are sponsored by Wizards of the Coast, by Magic, but they're not a big corporation that can afford it. Like, they had to build to get there. WotC's already there. So if their production isn't even on par with Game Nights, that's pretty bad, and they need to fix that because they can afford it.
Exactly. And what made me actually think about that was when you were talking, it was just off the top of my head, like how cool that would be if it was professional players doing that. But that would be a way for other games. So like if they did the Hearthstone player thing, right? And they brought him in and they did a Guilds to Ravnica draft or Guilds to Ravnica pre-release sealed event, two-headed giant, whatever, but they brought them in a game night quality production value with a little bit of maybe tutorial type speak in the background or narration to help explain things to newer players or people that don't play Magic. I think that would score a ton of new Magic players from those communities because they'd be able to see the cards, they'd be able to understand what's going on. And I don't know, it was kind of a tie-in between that separate conversation we were having about the Hearthstone players and another thing I was kind of looking at with the Jerry Thompson issues talking about coverage quality, you know, and part of the star building thing. So I think that would be kind of a solution to both, but again, it was just another tangent.
So Wizards of the Coast has been doing better with commentary. I know one of the biggest issues that Jerry brought up was with commentary. And they've been doing better with getting other people in than just the regular old people that they had been using. Like, I know that Maria Bartholdi, I think that's how you say her name, she's doing commentary now. Gabby Sparks has been doing commentary. They've got, I don't know how to say his name, the Eduardo, the pro Eduardo.
Oh, yeah.
But he's really good at commentary. I feel terrible for not knowing how to pronounce it, but he's great at commentary. Riley Knight's good. TJ Rogers is really good. Like, they've been bringing people in that are revitalizing the commentary. And I think that they need to keep going that way. That's a good way to bring your production quality up, too.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. So I've been seeing a lot of the arguments on the SCG tour commentary. You know, I've seen arguments comparing and contrasting both. Honestly, I think as far as commentary goes, I'm never really super upset with whoever's commentating. I think a lot of that's just taste, too. You know, like a lot of people think maybe Riley's jokes are kind of annoying or whatever, and some people think that if you watch SCG, they kind of just keep talking about random stuff, and if you're not familiar with the SCG Tour and who they are, it gets confusing. So, I mean, I can see both sides. I don't think it's so much the commentary as just the quality of the coverage itself. You know, I think some of the improvements that they have been making is, you know, the time walk magic, and I think that their willingness to experiment a little bit with that last Reed Duke following Grand Prix that they did, that was pretty interesting and a step in the right direction. But I think if they were to just stop for a second, bring in some of their higher level content creators, you know, like the people from Game Nights, you know, some of the bigger article generating sites and all these pros, and see what they think and actually listen to them and find out what the pros want from coverage that would help benefit them, it would just be a mutually benefiting event. But I don't know if you have anything else on coverage or on Jerry Thompson's boycott of Worlds.
No, I think we're good. I think we discussed pretty much everything. We beat this horse pretty good.
Yeah, and this happened a little while ago too. So there's been tons of things written about it. I'm honestly just curious to see where it goes. So I mean, kind of like how I forgot about the Silver Showcase and all the debacle that was around that. I'm gonna like write this down and remind myself like every week to check out and see if there's been any change, if there's been any more pros boycotting events or anything like that, and kind of see if it evolves at all. So keep this in the back of your head, check up on it, keep Wizards accountable, find out if the pros are actually, you know, fighting for themselves at all when it comes to this. But we got a few more topics and we are starting to run out of time, so the next topic shouldn't take very long. We're talking a little bit about the success of Brawl, or really the lack thereof, and how on Magic the Gathering Online, WotC has decided to pull back on the Brawl format. So do you know much about that?
Yeah, so Brawl had its initial run, and it ran, I guess, 6 months now. And you had you could play Brawl League, Brawl competitive leagues on Magic Online. Well, no longer. They announced that they were cutting Brawl from MTGO in regards to just, like, competitive leagues for actual, like, points, money, tickets, whatever. You can still play Brawl in the free-to-play section, and you can still set up things like that and play whoever is in the queues. But basically, the reason that this happened is it didn't live up to the hype that it had brought upon itself. So there would be competitive queues that only had one person in it for quite a while. Like, they couldn't fill queues. And I kind of expected this, personally. I don't think it's anything like Commander. It's only standard playable cards. And I just don't think that with that limit, I don't think that any, like, singleton format is going to be more than just a free-to-play, fun, casual format, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think I ever went to the game store or ever even ran into anyone that wanted to play Brawl. You know, like, I did not see any popularity from Brawl whatsoever. I never had any interest in playing Brawl. I think I kind of get the idea behind it. Like, you have Commander being remarkably successful, right? Commander is probably one of the biggest formats in regards to popularity in all of Magic. But I think they were trying to create a singleton format that was cheaper to get into, even though anyone can get into Commander. You just tailor down your power level, so that's not even a good argument. That would sell more cards. Okay, well, that kind of goes against the cheaper to get into thing. And, I mean, I just didn't see anywhere where the level of success for Brawl was even an option. So I'm not surprised by this. I'm not sad about it. I never played Brawl. Never ran into anyone playing it. If I ever wanted to play a singleton format, I would just play Commander. So, I don't know if you have anything else to add, but other than that, it's just a pretty much a public service announcement. If you were going to try to play Brawl on Magic the Gathering Online, it's not going to win you any ticks.
Yeah, it's just, I had the same experience at my LGS. My LGS is a huge Commander LGS, and as someone who doesn't play it, you know, I can see everybody else playing it and have so much fun. But The hype at that store was huge on Brawl at first, and they had Brawl decks and everything, and they even had a Brawl tournament, but it fell flat, and the hype just died down, and they just picked up their 100 card commander decks and brought them in and kept doing exactly what they always did. Everybody had something.
Yeah, so that's kind of curious. So I never even experienced any type of hype with Brawl. Like, I heard that it existed. I kind of looked at some deck lists and tried to get a feel of how the games were going. But so you said there was a lot of hype. It was a lot of from the Commander players. What killed it for them that you saw? What was it about Brawl that they did not like?
It's just a limited card pool. It's only standard playable stuff, and you got people playing some like ridiculously crazy things in Commander sometimes, and they couldn't do that kind of stuff. It's basically just standard, but with worse. 60 cards and only one of each. So yeah. It was just super limited.
Okay, so it's everything that you'd expect. It wasn't anything in particular. It was just less exciting Commander.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so we'll kind of just skip over that one, let you guys know about that. This last topic I think is actually pretty interesting, and we'll try to keep it short, but the announcement that Wizards is now going to be partnering with Amazon and other retailers such as Walmart to sell their goods directly through their online stores, basically cutting out, you know, the distributor and just going straight from WotC through these mediums to the customer. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, so this is a bad deal for LGSs. I'm not saying that the world's like the sky is falling or anything. I think that LGSs can bounce back from this, but the things that really bother me about this is how they said it. Wizards wants to meet the people that they can't meet right now by going to them. That's the people that they don't have an LGS near them. So they have to order their stuff online. So they want to get their product directly to them through Amazon.com, Walmart.com, Target.com, whatever. But the issue is the people that were selling on Walmart.com, Amazon.com, Target.com before were local game stores. The people yep. that are selling on TCG Player, local game stores. So what you're saying is you want to meet these people where you're not getting to them. You're getting the products, the sealed products, to the local game stores, and they're going to Amazon. You're getting your sealed products from you to the distributor, then they're going to Amazon. But now you're cutting them out completely. So where's the love there? You're undercutting them. And you're going over their head, and Amazon, Walmart don't have to adhere to an MSRP. So if they want to get competitive with it, they're just going to cut the price. So I've already seen that Amazon like cut the MSRP of like Ravnica boxes. They're at like $88. So that's yeah. undercutting even TCG Player. So that's
even
an issue.
Better than like eBay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an issue. The issue is you're giving these corporations the ability to undercut local game stores. So why would anybody want to go to a local game store to get a box? Walmart.com does free site to store shipping. You don't have to pay shipping if you get it from Walmart.com. You just go in and grab your box for $88. I think that's a bad deal.
I agree. So, I mean, I see it as a warning sign, and it's kind of one of the several pieces. So, I mean, this is like our last topic, and if you look at the topics that we've already talked about, right, the lack of support for professionals, the lack of coverage really being a focus, right, or at least from, well, the general community is unhappy with the quality of coverage as well as the pros. Okay, so lack of focus there, lack of focus on professionals and the prize payouts. You have the incorporation of an app, you have the incorporation of codes for the digital program for Arena, and you have the push for Arena. With Paper Magic, the entire survivability of it is really through the local game stores. Even if you just sell through Amazon and Walmart, you're losing the community that actually gathers their gathering place in order to play together, right? So I think overall you'd end up selling less if you kill all the local game stores and you just go direct through those sites, okay? Bringing me back to the other point, if all the local game stores shut down, then everyone's going to be forced to go to digital, unless they're going to go play in big events, in which case they could just order online. So what's scaring me is that all these pieces are leading towards the full commitment of Magic becoming a solely esport on Arena. So that's kind of an argument that was not generated by me, but someone pointed out to me. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on those different pieces adding up to that conclusion in the next couple of years.
I mean, I can honestly see it. I mean, I know that they're not really supporting MTGO, of course, because they can have bugs in that system for like 2 years. Like, look at Wall of Roots.
Yeah.
But
I mean, people have already spent so much money in MTGO. There's no way they could ever shut it down. They
just have to
keep it alive so that people don't riot.
Yeah, they got to keep, as long as it's making them money, as long as they can keep milking that for whatever it's worth, they're going to keep it open.
But, why not?
But like Arena, they're putting a big emphasis on Arena, and I don't see them phasing out Paper Magic, but it's, I mean, it almost seems like the writing's on the wall. Cuz I mean, what's going to happen is, if this is going to be critical for local game stores, I think some stores will survive. Some stores are going to have to change up their economy and trying to figure out how they need to run their store now. But I think you'll still have those loyal customers that come in and buy the product from you. But stores don't make any money off of tournaments. And I know people are all like, well, yeah, they do. My local game store only takes $5. $5 off of a Friday Night Magic. Everything else is given back in prize support. So you're not making money off of events, not there. And I know the other local game store that I go to, he overpays. He overpays out. Because if you have a winning record on a Tuesday night, which is a 3-2, you get your money back. And first place usually gets like $50, $60 in store credit. So sure, they're taking in cash, but they're giving back store credit. And that's still product that they're losing. They're still giving it back in product, basically. So I guess they're coming net positive there, but I just don't think that they don't make any money off events. Their sealed products are what make them their money. And if you're gonna undercut them and it's gonna force them out of the business, like, you're gonna have fewer local game stores. You're gonna have fewer places for grinders to go and practice. I know that the casual players make up the most of the majority of the Magic player field, but you're not going to have people grinding. You're not going to have new players on the Pro Tour, and eventually your whole system is just going to fail without local game stores. But if it fails, I guess they do. Yeah, I could see them just going straight digital.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case. I love the paper version. It's what I know. And I love the local game store community. You know what I mean? Like, for a lot of people, Magic's kind of that disconnect. Go to the place, meet up with some buddies, play the game, enjoy yourself. And so it would really break my heart to see, you know, these clues that lead up to a full committal to the digital arena. I really don't want to see that happen. But it was pointed out to me, and I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are too. So if you guys have any thoughts on really any of the topics that we brought up, make sure you hit us up on either MTG Deck Techs on Facebook or Twitter. You can, and then you can hit us directly too, and we'll give you our Twitter handles at the end of this. But I think that we're just going to move on. We could probably talk about, you know, the support of local game stores for a long time, and I think we've been bashing WotC quite enough this episode. So we have one other topic before we go into our Triple Strike questions and how to enter for a free booster pack. We have our community spotlight for this episode. So, Jason, who do we got for this week's community spotlight, and what is it?
So, the community spotlight is something that we're going to do on every podcast episode, where we're going to point out one community or one Magic content community, one MTG community content creator, and try to help. We want to point them out because they're doing something cool or they need support, or we just think they're awesome people and we want you to go check them out. So our inaugural community spotlight for our podcast is going to be for Pappy Popper. Pappy Popper is a YouTuber that does Popper deck techs. He hosted the Pappy Popper tournament that 32 of us in the Magic Popper community played in. I played in it. Mike VC played in it, one of our writers who also has his own channel. Jungle Fiver, another one of our good friends, played in it. It was really cool, and it got a lot of us together and everything, and Pappy Popper put it on. His content's great. He does deck techs, of course, on Popper stuff. He does. I'm actually going to be playing him, and he's going to put our match up on his YouTube. But not only is he a great content creator, he's just a great person and a great community member, and I can't say enough about him. He's awesome. So please go find him on YouTube. Just look up Pappy Popper on YouTube, and you'll find him. You can find him on Twitter at Pappy Popper, and please go give him love and tell him I sent you. And any bit of subscriptions or follows, he definitely deserves them.
Absolutely. And you were talking about his tournaments. Is there a way for our listeners to enter these tournaments, or is there a schedule of sorts?
He's planning on doing another one. Basically, just follow him on Twitter and get at him whenever he announces it. I think he's going to try to do one at the beginning of the year. We just wrapped up this one, and I don't know. I can't remember who won, but Pappy Popper's got all those details, so go follow him on Twitter.
Absolutely. Also, if you're into Popper at all, we have a new column on the website, and it's the Pied Popper column. Make sure you hit it up. The first article went up this last week, and it's really, really good. It's got a sweet deck tech on there, and you guys can try it out. And, of course, it's Popper, so you can just jump on MTGO and get it for cheap and maybe enter Pappy Popper's tournament.
Yeah, to tie into that deck tech that Jade did for the Pied Popper, that was the deck tech that I did a video on, and that's the deck that I'm going to take against Pappy Popper whenever we do this match.
There you go, so you'll get some gameplay footage of it as well. All right, so we did Pappy Popper. Next, we're going to go into our triple strike questions. Okay, so how this works is at the end of each episode, we like to present three questions, purely trivia, that you guys can look up or answer or think about on your drive to work or wherever you are right now. And what you do is you can enter and win a free booster pack on us, just like MTG Strategist did with the last episode. How you do it? So we're going to change it a little bit, okay? What you got to do is on Facebook or Twitter, just type in hashtag MTG Deck Techs in your post with the answers to these three questions and a link to our podcast. So whether that's on whatever podcast listening platform you are on right now, or the link that we will provide on the website, the mtgdecktechs.com website, there will be a podcast article with this episode. You can link that as well. So you'll answer the questions, hashtag MTG Deck Techs, a link to the podcast episode, and we'll make sure that you are entered to get that booster pack. Okay, so without further ado, our questions for this episode. So the first strike question is, why was Felidar Guardian banned in Standard back in April of 2017? All right, so the second question, the double strike question, is, how many slivers have been printed in Magic the Gathering? All right. And the last strike question is, how many cards are in a small cube? Or at least, what is the minimum cube size for an 8-person draft? Okay. So an answer to both of those questions. That's kind of a hint on the second part. All right, so those are your triple strike questions. Go ahead and shoot us an answer with a hashtag MTG Deck Techs and a link to the podcast episode, and you'll be entered to win. It's that easy. We'll send a Guilds of Ravnica booster pack right to you. And that pretty much covers it. So, Jason, how can people reach you if they want to ask you questions or anything?
Well, first I want to say, since you brought Felidar Guardian up, rest in peace, Felidar Guardian. Fly high, baby boy.
Never forget.
But you can reach me on Twitter at T2TKS or at MTGDeckTex on Twitter.
All right, excellent. And you can reach me on Twitter at JamesRMTG. Or you can just hit up the MTG DeckTex Facebook page or Twitter page, and I'll be sure to see it. So thanks for listening. Make sure you check us out next week. And I think that's all we have. Have a great week, guys.
See you guys later.